Hello all. You are tuning in to the 51st episode of the Audible Weed Walk. This is Nina welcoming you. I often get this question and also have wondered myself, if I save seed and grow some of the wild greens, can they still be called wild? Because part of being wild is also uncultivated. So does growing or nurturing a plant amount to cultivating? It does, right? Only thing, the word grown also can refer to something that has grown over on its own, whereas cultivated is definitely intentional. And to me, it implies a scale which is large. For me, growing and nurturing is at a smaller scale than cultivation, which is more at the latter is more at the farm level. But, you know, there is, you know, definition wise, that's, you know, those differentiation cannot be made. Now, thinking rationally, I would say that the wild uncultivated plants are so rich in nutrition and micronutrients because they grow wild. In a way, they are toughies. They do the best of the situation they're in. For a plant, what does that mean? Remember, as kids, we used to be given essays to write, like, for example, a conversation between an apple and an orange. I do not know if that was done across India or if such essays are given even now, but we certainly did. It is a good exercise to try to think from another point of view. So I will wear that hat now and will think like a weed. As a weed, I would like to get enough nutrients for me to grow. I do not mind other plants growing very close to me as long as I can hold my ground so that another plant doesn't take over so much that my channel of nutrition, sun and water gets blocked. So I must grow rather fast. I must also take precautions to avoid predation. So who are my predators? All the herbivores and some insects and insect larvae. I just need to avoid being eaten a lot long enough for me to flower and produce seeds so that the new plant, the next generation, can grow. That makes me both wild and weedy. The cultivated cousins need distances from each other, often need props to stand when they are fruiting, and definitely quite often needs human help for them to fight the herbivores. So, back to my human hat. So, if the wild weedy plant is growing, and I am not pulling it out consciously, I am allowing it to grow. When I am introducing the seeds and nurturing, I am growing it. But it is not full-fledged, a field full of one type of plant. So, it's actually more diverse and at a smaller scale. Scale, I think, makes a big difference. I think, even if I am deliberately growing wild plants, I am growing in pots, which are pretty small scale, or in the grounds in bed, ideally mixed with other plant. That may be mimicking the wild growing experience. Still, there is a question. How much? There is a thumb rule of bringing food for potluck, you know. Most of the time, you have no clue how many people are coming to the potluck. And if there are 50 people invited, you have no way to cook for 50. So the thumb rule is you cook for yourself. If you are two people going, then, you know, cook for the number of people who are going and five more. So the thumb rule in growing is that if you are growing for yourself and your family, then you are at a scale that is not a cultivation. You may still have some surplus to share with others, but you then have the luxury of putting diverse plants, wild and not so wild, in your yard or pots and space, you know, space permitting, how much space you have. You do not need, for example, 100 tomato plants or 30 lemon trees. You can do with one or few. Now, if you grow wild plants, even in small places, wild plants allow you to grow a greater diversity of greens in a small place, unlike, say, for example, cultivated plants like tomatoes. I could not find any research paper on how nutritionally a wild plant changes if it is picked from the wild, nurtured, like, you know, cultivated in a small homestead scale, and then cultivated like regular crop or plant in a sort of largish monoculture. Would be interesting to find out. My hypothesis is, for the wild edibles, nutritionally those that are growing in the wild or allowed to grow in the yard are most nutritious, closely followed by those grown in diversity, like in Circle Garden that Krishna McKenzie has introduced to many since the pandemic. It has become quite a movement. Like the Circle Gardens, of even garden or farming done in permaculture principle, that can be, you know, container or pot in terrace, yard, or even farm. So these type of, farming or cultivating or growing allows diversity. So there, I think the plant will still be very nutritious. So if you are growing wild plants along with other plants in a rich, diverse setting, I think it does well nutritionally. Monoculture of the same is a bad idea, though it might be convenient. So what makes one plant wild when it is weedy, and why in my book I have also used the term naturally growing in addition to, weed. Weed, let me address like that. So we have three terms: wild, weedy, and naturally growing. Weed part is simple. Essentially, when we have not planted something, a plant appears on its own and we have no clue what it is. We club them under the name weed. When we start getting to know them better, they have a name. We appreciate their qualities. We feel a link with them. Usually we do not like calling them weeds. We call them wild, uncultivated, etc. Sometimes when the wild weedy plant has a name, but it kind of gets difficult to manage and start taking over your yard or farm, we continue to call, almost like out of spite, a weed. And we add adjective to it, a noxious weed or invasive species. The words say much about our attitude and less about the plant, except that they are fighters who are able to grow and dominate despite adverse conditions. For example, we have Sphagnaticola trilobata. I think it's called, I forgot its common name, trilobe ivy or something. Its cousin is Sphagnaticola calendulaceae. This later one, we locally call it Manjal Karisalankannai or Pita Bhringaraj, and it is eaten. But both these plants have the ability to take over. And right now, many of the farms across the country, I hear that this has really become a difficult to control. Well, let me not veer off to the weed control now. We have one more term to discuss. Remember? The naturally growing plant. What is it? Well, they're all weedy plants that we did not know, now know, and those that will appear next. And also plants we did not plant, but they have volunteered. This term volunteering is very common in the gardening world. For example, tomatoes often appear in the compost pile and survive well. I have a lowkey or a bottle gourd growing just like that. In fact, I wanted to call them volunteers in my book also, but then it would have been called Edible Weeds and Volunteers. And it sounded perfect to me, but in a community that actually has many human volunteers engaged in a wonderful activity, calling them edible was not a very great idea. So, not to scare them off by calling them edible volunteers, we call them naturally growing, which sounded like a good alternative. It includes the weedy, wild, uncultivated ones of various types. Now coming to the last bit. Why, if tomato is volunteering and growing naturally, we do not consider it wild or uncultivated? We consider them uncultivated because it's volunteering, but we do not consider it wild. What is it? For example, tulsi. We know that we grow tulsi also, but if it's, that is another species that volunteers quite often, like it naturally pops up around you. So if it is growing naturally, we do call it wild. So why such discrimination? Tell you a story. One of the first time that we had gone to Kalakadu Forest, which is part of the Western Ghat protected area in Tamil Nadu, as an ecology student. This is a humid tropical forest, rainforest. And we were doing vegetation survey, etc. We found one leaf that was so large that we could not put it in our regular plant press without, bending it. So we learned that that one single leaf was actually part of a whole roll. And the leaf, which a roll is, the leaf which get arranged in circular arrangement, are cashew leaves, mango leaves, they're all in rolls. So it turned out that this was a leaf of a wild mango tree. Huge tree. They fruit once in 5 years. And the fruit is so fibrous, it's almost impossible for any human to consume. Animals, of course, love it. From there, now we have mangoes with no or even pepper thin seeds. And the pulp is nice without any fiber and pudding-like. So how did that happen? Well, from the time immemorial, human beings have adapted plants for their own use by selective breeding and by grafting. But why? For taste, for sure. But is it just that? We will discuss that in our next podcast. So hold that thought. See you next week. Stay well and stay safe.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.